In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Thank you, Pat Speckhard, and happy anniversary to Pat as well. I saw Pat posted that it's his copper anniversary. I have no idea what that is. Which one?
Copper. I want to say. What is it? Would like six or seven? Is that right?
Maybe.
That
seems about right, but I don't know.
Timeline wise, yeah. I my first instinct was seven, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Copper and we'll look that up. Our crack research team will take care of that. That's Alan Adams, by the way, who joins us for Pass the Popcorn. Hello and happy Monday.
And happy Monday to you as well.
We were conferring and hobnobbing here during the break, and you and I both decided that no. Too nice a day to be doing yard work.
Well, and you know, we've discussed this many times over the years, but we are now entering, and it's a little later than it has been in the past, but we're entering what I consider to be just absolutely peak weather. As you can tell, like when I walked in here, long sleeves on top, wearing shorts. That is absolutely the ideal. Ordinarily, we get about 3 weeks of that. It's looking like we're probably looking at more like 10 days. Before you know, actual winter arrives, because you know that's just the way it is, I suppose. Yeah. But there you have it.
By the way, you were dead on. Copper is the 7th anniversary.
Nice, nailed it.
Well done. I'm trying to remember what I got Abby for probably a penny,
a shiny new penny. I found this on the ground.
Yeah,
it's happy. Lucky,
like you are, honey. did you do anything fun this weekend?
This weekend was largely consumed by us slowly but surely getting our house back in order.
Oh, fantastic.
Now that the kitchen has been finished, we're slowly moving things down, the boxes down from upstairs, and finding, you know, where they're going to live in the new space, determining stuff that maybe doesn't have to live downstairs anymore.
Because this has been like a 9-10 months of not really having a functioning kitchen.
The incident took place on December 19th.
Oh my
of last
gosh.
Year. So,
and I remember it was, I think, on a Monday.
Yep.
Because you sent me a text and said, hate to do this, but we've got issues.
Yep.
Oh man. No, it wasn't good.
Nope. Yes. Well, and as you know, like there, It takes wild horses to keep me away. So,
well, yes.
or massive flooding, one of the two.
Yeah, sometimes both, and that's really bad.
Exactly, but yeah. So that was a big chunk of the weekend, like moving stuff back up and downstairs, and like sort of getting things more situated. Like, I don't know. Like I made chili on Saturday, and I was just like, sitting there, and I wasn't crowded. I didn't have to like figure out, okay, what am I going to do to make sure that this crock pot will be usable again after I make this chili? Like, it's just like, oh, I have a big functioning sink.
Oh,
so
man.
I can just clean things as I go.
Oh, what a deal.
You know, and our dishwasher works. So it's like, I'm not hand washing two drinking glasses at a time. It's
and so much better for Stella because of all that pre-washing she had to do.
Oh man, I'll tell you what. obviously we certainly didn't know this was going to happen, but you know, as you know, Stella has long been terrified of walking through our kitchen. Turns out the culprit was the linoleum. She is no longer scared of the kitchen.
Wow.
She'll just walk right in.
Oh, like, that's nice.
I mean, there's a little hesitance, I think, just learned behavior. But like, she doesn't freak out by the texture or anything like that. So it's just a lovely little unexpected bonus.
No, what do you have for a floor there now?
It's a faux tile. It looks like slate.
Oh,
but it's nice. it's like a sort of a process material flooring, but it's really nice, you know, and it's a nice gray. So it matches with the newly dark, lower cabinets.
Oh,
and
I look forward to seeing it all.
Oh man. Like we've actually discussed at length. We're like, we're going to have to make a list because like one of the things that we've missed the most about all of this is like, we like having people over, you know, like to like, just, you know, have come over for a, you know, a cocktail and charcuterie or maybe dinner or something like that. We've always loved doing that. Leaving aside the larger social events that we host.
Right.
We just haven't been able to do that.
Yeah, and the, you know, the worst part of that is, you know, we had just kind of come out of this COVID thing where you could have people over, and then boom.
Yeah, and that was like we were already making plans for our the return of our New Year's Day sort of blowout, and then it's like, oh well, no, we're not gonna do that, I guess. But you know, knock on wood, you know, maybe 2024 is the return. We'll cross our fingers. You know what
I am knocking away right there. All right, what's going on in the world of cinema?
Well, I did not go to the movies. Nah. The only new film airing in our neck of the woods was the what appears to be poorly thought out Exorcist sequel, prequel. I don't even know,
like, poor Ellen Burstyn.
It just seems poorly considered, and again a lot of the people involved, like I think David Gordon Green has shown an ability to sort of to work well with these sort of pre-existing like franchises. Like I liked his Halloween movies, so the first two, the last one was kind of garbage, but whatever. I don't know. I don't even think there should have been an Exorcist 2. Like, I mean, it's just like the Exorcist is one of those movies that
I think Billy Friedkin said too,
right?
Why
would you do this? You know, and it's like, and then, you know, and Exorcist 2, The Heretic has its champions. And there are people who ride hard for the Exorcist 3. I'm never going to understand that. No. But like, but then it's like, it's just sort of, it's really gone downhill pretty quickly. And I don't see that this is the way to sort of reinvigorate the franchise. Because again, like, and can't be stressed enough, the first film is a masterpiece. It is easily one of the greatest horror films, genre films, I think, of all time. And so, you know, going back to that well over and over again, it just doesn't, it just doesn't appeal to me. And yet, one of the films I did watch this weekend did involve returning to a well.
Well was that?
It was a well first dug by the head honcho here.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a on Paramount Plus, there is currently streaming Pet Sematary Bloodlines, which is a prequel to the remake that came out a couple of years ago. And it is a movie that exists in the world. So I saw that. I also watched a sort of Netflix erotic thriller called Fair Play.
Oh, you know who's in that? Friend of Downtown, Rich Summer.
Yep.
I think is in that.
Yep. I mean, it's a pretty good cast. The movie itself was so-so. And then my favorite of the bunch of the weekend, a movie that I'm going to recommend extremely highly, even though I think largely because it could not have been more specifically targeted at me and mine. It's a film. It's currently streaming on Amazon Prime Video. It is called Totally Killer, and it is basically the elevator pitch I saw for it, which seems relatively accurate. Halloween meets Back to the Future.
All right, I like that. Sounds interesting. I want to know at least.
Right,
yes.
Like that's like that. I saw that and I'm like, oh well, I'm clearly going to watch this movie. Not only did I watch it, I greatly enjoyed it.
All right, well let's start because I think I know which direction we're going with these. So let's begin with Pet Sematary Bloodlines.
Bloodlines. For those who are fans of Mr. King's book. The original 1989 movie, which by the way, there a fairly prominent podcast is coming to the University of Maine. They're going to be speaking about a couple of Mr. King's movies, and one of which would be Pet Sematary. That event is happening on October 19th.
Oh, what podcast is that?
Oh, I wish I could remember the name off the top of my head. And I will look it up, and I will make sure that you have that.
Is it the one kind of devoted to King's work?
It's not a King specific one. It's a movie specific.
All right.
Yes, I will look that up while we sort of discuss Pet Sematary Bloodlines, because again, it's weird that this movie exists. I think the thing about it is, I love the fact that Stephen King is so good at sort of baking lore into his stories, particularly the earlier books. Like, he does a wonderful job of sort of setting the scene in a way that is evocative, but not like overly expository. Like, he doesn't, you know, it's like, you know, you don't get the whole history of why the cemetery does what it does, but, you know, you get the sort of the brief history, the almost genealogical.
It's the I Saw What You Did podcast.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, they are going to be presenting at the University of Maine.
Cool.
On, I believe, October 19th, from 3:30 to 5:30 at the IMRC Center.
Yeah,
nice. They're talking Pet Sematary and Misery, and it's going to be very cool. And I will be there, and I hope other folks will be there too. But yeah, so Pet Sematary Bloodlines, it's set in 1969 in Ludlow, Maine. We meet our primary character is the young version of Judd Crandall, he of the unfortunate Maine accent, courtesy of Fred Gwynn in the original film.
Don't be dissing Fred Gwynn. Come on. Look,
Fred Gwynn was an amazing actor and a wonderful performer and a key part of Hollywood history. That accent was terrible. Not his fault.
No.
Not his fault.
No, it was Murder, She Wrote-esque.
Yes. I mean, it was like, it was full of, he Cabot Coved it, and you never want to Cabot Cove it. But this film is a prequel, set in 1969. Young Judd Crandall is about to leave Ludlow to head off to join the Peace Corps with his girlfriend. Bill Braderman, played by David Duchovny, his son, has just come back from Vietnam, but you know, for those familiar with Pet Sematary, and if you're watching Pet Sematary Bloodline, I hope that you are in fact familiar, because otherwise, what are you doing? But Bill takes Timmy, his son, out into the cemetery, and does what you do in the cemetery, and well, Timmy comes back, and it's not good, not a good thing. What happens? And basically what follows is we watch as the town sort of struggles to deal with the fact that they have to fight against this ancient evil again. And the sort of we get some moments where we learn about the sort of covenant between the town's founding families that are, you know, dedicated to protecting the town and, well, the world, I guess, really, from the sinister, nameless evil that floats around in the woods. Possessing people and, you know, bringing the dead back to life, except not really. And, and we go from there. And our boy Judd is left to try and figure out how to save the day when, you know, his friends are starting to turn and everybody's in danger. And his dad, who is one of the founding fathers, played by Henry Thomas, who it's always nice to see Henry Thomas. Yeah. Yeah, and so no one's really telling him everything that he needs to know, and yet he's sort of left to try to figure out how to save the day. Yeah, it's one of those films where, honestly, the best parts, I think, are the sort of flashbacky ones where we get sort of there's a sequence where the first Europeans to come to, you know, to the area show up, and we discover what happened to the first guy, the Ludlow, who after whom the town is named. We find out what happened to that guy. Nothing good, I'll tell you that much. And that's kind of it. Like, it's a very short movie. Like with credits, it runs like an hour 27. Like, it's a really quick in and out. The performances are fine. Nobody really stands out, but nobody really screws the pooch either, which is nice. They put together some okay storytelling. It's nice to see Duchovny working. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's the sort of film where it's a prequel to a remake that I felt was unnecessary when it happened. You know, I didn't really need a new Pet Sematary. Like, the last one was fine. It wasn't as outright awful as some of these films have been, but it wasn't great either. But apparently it was successful enough to warrant, you know, making this movie. And, if they want to expand on this world and this, you know, sort of develop, however you want to do it. I mean, sure, why not? Not necessarily for me, but you know, if you're a King completist or just a horror fan, like, you could do worse. And again, like I said, it's like, you know, it's like an hour and 23 minutes. Like, it's not like it's a huge time commitment. So yeah, get in there, check it out, and see how it holds up with the source material. I'll give you a hint. Not great.
We're talking movies with Alan Adams here on Pass the Popcorn. All right, let's discuss Fair Play. Let's go steamy erotic thriller next, because why not?
Yeah, well, it's really funny. It's written and directed by Chloe DeMont, feature film debut. Actually has a pretty impressive cast. Phoebe Dynevor from Bridgerton, Alden Ehrenreich, Eddie Marsan's in this. You mentioned Rich Sommer. It's a good cast. It's one of those movies that, and it's going to sound like I'm being derogatory here, and maybe I am a little bit, but that's not my intent. This movie could have had, like, say, 35 years ago. Put this movie on Cinemax at 1 a.m. with, like, Lena Olin as the female lead, and it would not be out of place. We'll put it that way. It has that sort of campy, trashy sort of erotic thriller vibe from from early 90s late night cable that those of us who came of age at that time are very familiar with. But yeah, the basic gist is it's these two people, Emily, played by Dynevor, and Luke, who's played by Ehrenreich. They work at this big deal financial firm. They're both analysts, but they're both very ambitious. They're looking to move up the ladder and to really develop their develop their skills, you know, make more money, you know, more power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But it all starts to crumble when a promotion opens up, and the one who gets it is Emily rather than Luke.
Oh, man.
And then it turns out that Luke is going to have to work as her analyst. And so that turns into... it starts off, you're like, oh, okay, like there's some complicated feelings about this and whatever, but it escalates. You know, they've been in a romance for a couple of years, which is against company policy, ooh, by the way. They've just gotten engaged, but they're not telling anyone because, again, of the aforementioned company policy. But now that she is his superior, that complicates the relationship even more. And, you know, she starts to question his motives. He starts to get paranoid and angry and, things venture towards the misogynistic a little bit, as, you know, you might expect. And and interspersed throughout just a lot of really dirty sex stuff. Some frontal nudity. Like,
oh, Lordy.
I mean,
our boy Rich, I hope. I mean, he had to fly to, like, Bosnia to shoot this thing, I think.
Yes, no, no. As per usual, the nudity is restricted pretty much exclusively to the ladies.
Oh, yeah. Well there you go.
You know, that's just...
Ain't that America?
I know, society. Thanks, everybody. The situation escalates, and we wind up sort of watching this relationship really fall into turmoil and really escalate at a extremely high rate of speed for all the reasons that these movies tend to accelerate the timeline. It's okay. So this is not a good movie. But it's not good in the way you want it to not be good, if that makes sense. Like, it was I'm sitting there watching it and I'm like, wow, this movie is kind of terrible. But it's a familiar kind of terrible and a sort of an enjoyable kind of terrible in that everybody, like,
I think terrible, but hey, they're naked.
Well, there's boobs, and you know that's okay. But no, the thing about it is, it's everybody involved in this movie seemed to understand the assignment.
Mm.
Like nobody had any delusions about what kind of movie this is.
Right.
And when you have that kind of buy-in from your cast, like that can paper over a lot of sins.
Oh, sure.
When it comes to this sort of thing, so it's. When everybody involved is just gnawing on the scenery and just really clearly having a good time, you know, like glowering and pouting and like posing in the shadows and just like doing all that stuff, you're just like, oh, well, you're having a delightful time. Now that I know that, well, I guess I'm having a delightful time. and so you just kind of go from there. Again, it's you see where it's going. Like there are very few surprises in this film. But for what it is, I don't regret the time I spent watching this film. And I'll be honest, about 15 minutes in, I was pretty sure I was going to regret it. So, so Fair Play won me over.
All right. Well, finally, let's hear about Totally Killer.
Okay. So, I mean, I already alluded to this earlier in our conversation, but man, I loved this movie. So the basic gist is, I don't even know what you call it, but it's the second feature from Ninochka Khan, who directed Always Be My Maybe.
Oh, okay.
A couple of years ago, which was an excellent film.
Yeah, it was terrific.
And this one, also excellent, although a very, very different movie. It's produced under the Blumhouse umbrella, so Jason Blum doing his thing. It's nice for him to have at least one good movie come out this weekend, because Blumhouse was also bears some responsibility for the Exorcist debacle, which by the way, somebody paid like $450 million for the rights for three of these movies.
Wow!
And now it's like, are they even going to make another one? Like, I don't know how well this did at the box office, but I have to assume it was not great. But anyway, Khan directed, but it's got a great cast. Kiernan Shipka, who's best known to folks, she stars on the new Sabrina the Teenage Witch reboot.
Yeah, and was on Mad Men as Don Draper's daughter.
Yep. So she's been around a bunch. Julie Bowen's in it. Randall Park shows up in a couple of scenes. Like, it's really very good. But yeah, so here's the basic gist. So back in 1987, over the course of three consecutive nights, at the end of October, three teenage girls were killed: Tiffany, Marissa, and Heather. They were killed by a killer that would ultimately be known as the Sweet 16 Killer, because all three of them were 16, and they were each stabbed 16 times, And then just the killer just vanished. The crime was never solved. And we just sort of live in this town, and it sort of becomes part of the town's sort of lore. Again, very similar to like the town of Haddonfield and Halloween, that sort of deal. We move to the present day. We've got a teenager by the name of Jamie Hughes. That would be Kiernan Shipka, who lives in this town with her parents. The aforementioned Julie Bowen is her mom. The Sweet 16 Killer has become a little bit almost of a cottage industry, where it's like there are true crime podcasts, and there's a guy who has a prominent podcast who also runs Sweet 16 Killer tours in the town in the month of October. It's that kind of deal.
Yeah.
Our girl Jamie wants to go to a concert with her best friend. Her mom is super paranoid about it, but this is where we get the quick exposition dump, where it's like, you know, you've spent your whole life teaching me to look out for myself, like maybe take self-defense classes, and I carry like mace and all these things. So, you know, just sort of setting the scene. We go from there. She goes to meet her best friend at the school science fair, which is held at the abandoned amusement park. for reasons that they never it was cheap, and that was basically all they say. Like, they never really explain it. Turns out her best friend is a genius who is, for her science project, building a time machine. using notes taken by her mom back in the day, which, as you can imagine, is probably going to come back to be an important bit of information. Anyway, long story short, the killer comes back for reasons that no one's really sure about. While Jamie is at the abandoned amusement park at night, because, you know, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
They struggle. She winds up inside the time machine. The killer inadvertently helps activate said time machine. And then next thing you know, Jamie's back in 1987.
Whoa.
It's the day of the first murder.
Oh, my.
And she is going to take it upon herself to try and prevent these killings for reasons that are very deeply personal for her at this point. Ooh. And yeah, and so we basically have this wonderful sort of fish out of water situation where we're watching frankly, elevated version of 1987 and watching a teenage girl from 2023 try to navigate it. Like, everybody smokes and, like,
big hair,
you know, casual misogyny and sexism, like all this stuff. And, you know, and she tries to, you know, she tries to exert, 21st century mores onto these people, and it does not go well.
No.
Frankly, hilarious ways. But yes, so she tries to figure out what she's going to do, winds up connecting with her best friend's mom, who is a teenager, gets to the high school, tries to get in with the girls who are going to be murdered, but she finds out there's a fourth member of that group. And that fourth member might just grow up to be someone very close to our Jamie. Not going to spoil it, but you can probably figure it out.
Nice. This sounds good.
It's really good. It's really well executed. It has a lot of fun with the sort of basic time travel tropes. You know, it's so funny because, like, she, you know, when she is trying to explain to people what's going on, she'll try to use Back to the Future as a touch point. But, you know, it's only 2 years after it came out. Home video is not really a thing.
Right.
So a lot of people hadn't seen it. And so it's just like, it's just brilliant, like a running gag that. And just, but just this wonderful, really funny sort of fish out of water comedy surrounded by reasonably well executed slasher film. Like, we get some pretty brutal moments, but it's never like over the top. But just all the pieces fit together in a way that I just found really entertaining. And nice. Again, like, I love a smart horror movie. I love a time travel movie. I love a teen comedy. And this, it's all of these things. Nice. Like, Totally Killer is all of these things. And I honestly have to say, it's one of the better movies I've seen in a while.
Wow.
I really dug it.
What service is this on?
It's through Amazon Prime Video.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I got to check that out. Sounds good.
Well, and just so people know, with Prime Day rapidly approaching, it is at no point in the year is it cheaper to get Amazon Prime than it is right now. So if this movie sounds like something that appeals to you, go ahead and take the plunge and get free shipping on some stuff for a couple of months.
I'm going to check it out. Yeah. Thanks, Al.
Hey, my pleasure.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
Congratulations on the kitchen.
Thank you so much.
And let's do this again next week.
You know what? Let's.
All right. It's Alan Adams talking movies. Pass the pop.